welcome to We Knows Parenting. I'm Peter McNerney.
I'm Beth Newell.
We are real life parents and married couple. And this podcast is, you know, we're just comparing notes in the week, trying to figure it out. Beth, how are you?
I'm okay. As you're aware, I've had a busy couple weeks, but that means I've been away from my children a lot, which means it all kind of evens out. It's not as exhausting as being with them.
Yeah, I don't feel bad for you at all. Oh no, I'm so busy doing a thing I love away from my kids all week.
I feel very disoriented towards this podcast right now because this is like 2 weeks of me being gone for most bedtimes, and I don't remember where we left off or what's happened or who our kids are
or who I am or what's going on or anything.
Do I have a husband? Last night, I checked my phone. I was at work late and I texted you and I was like, who's getting our kids tonight? Because I knew you teach on Thursday and I knew someone was probably getting your kids.
And it was my mom. You had no idea that she was even
in town. I kind of knew, but I didn't.
You had things to focus on, big exciting things.
But it's nice to not worry about your kids.
I've been worrying about our kids. Boy, I had a late audition. I had to bring them into the city. I had to find a babysitter.
Yeah, and that went pretty well.
It went well. There's only been two of the most ferocious, terrifying tantrums that I've ever seen in my entire life. Other than that, it's been great.
I'll say, we've probably talked about this before, but for people who don't live in New York, taking your kids into the city when you don't live in the city is a nightmare. It's one of the most exhausting, scary, annoying things to think about doing.
Well, I'm over, like, it's so much easier than it used to be. Now that, like, I took the car and I found a place to park, and Bryn walked the rest of the way, and I carried Maven. Before, it was like, that was not an option. You had to strap him into the thing and know where you're going, blah, 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 and it was raining. But this was no problem.
I mean, you're just strong enough to do that, though. I think that would terrify me, to have two kids on the streets of New York.
I'm just strong enough.
I'm saying
I'm very strong.
I don't feel physically strong enough to carry Maven and then hold Bryn's hand for like multiple blocks and not be totally
luckily,
stressed.
I only had to walk half a block. I didn't know it was going to be that easy, but it was great.
That's still, I mean, like if one thing goes wrong and two kids start trying to sprint in different directions.
In the middle of the city, they're so like excited and overwhelmed, they're not going anywhere. Anyway,
well,
what didn't go great was Bryn threw a couple of tantrums. And the first tantrum, I forget what day this was, but you were gone working all day. And I bring him home. He has this terrible habit where he comes in and just like opens the fridge. And I'm like, I'm making dinner, Bryn. No, stop grabbing cheese and stuff. And then he freaks out, blah, blah, blah. I don't even know what it was. But it was a tantrum that led to complete and total rage in this three-year-old, where he's looking at me, just literally going, rrr, rrr.
It feels like something hormonal is happening. I definitely think there's a hunger element or
dehydration. Oh, yeah, he's
hungry
and tired, and I'm telling him no, and he can't handle it, and he started hitting me.
I feel like other parents have figured out a stronger snack game than we have.
So yesterday, my mom was here, and we were picking up this kids together. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to show my mom what a good dad I am. So I prepared a bowl of fruit for them. So then I went to pick them up. When they came in, they saw this bowl of fruit. And I was like, I have time to make dinner now. They're not going to harass me. And they just ate the fruit in 5 seconds. And then we're like, we want cheese. We want milk. Tears.
Yeah, the healthy snack you give them is just fuel for them to be more pissed off about the lack of dinner.
Anyway, this tantrum builds and it rages, and he starts destroying things. I try to like leave him alone. I'm like, and I try to be calm. Mostly, I have a pretty good tactic where I just like, I ask him, I was like, do you feel angry? And that usually calms him down. And he's like, yes. And then we can like talk. But this was, he was hitting me. And I was like, I can't let you hit me. So I'm sort of like blocking his hands and I'm just trying to get away from him. And then I get away and then he'll just like tip over the trash can. So I had to grab him. I was like, you need alone time. And I put him in his room and I close the door. And then he starts destroying things in the room. And I go in and I'm like, you need to stop. And this is like 45 minutes. And then I put him on his bed and he starts swinging at me. And I just pick up a pillow and I just start blocking his hits. And this is enraging him so much worse to the point where I am now so emotional and angry and I want to, you know, fight back. But obviously I'm not going to. He's three. But I start dodging these punches with a pillow a little too aggressively where, like, it knocks him down.
You've made it into a game.
You
knocked him over?
He's on his mattress. So he swings with his whole body, and I put the pillow up to hit it, and he hits it, and he falls down, and he goes, stop it, daddy! And then I suddenly feel like I'm attacking him.
They're throwing a tantrum, and they're like, stop it!
Yeah, and
as if you're the crazy one.
Then you came home at this time, and I go, you need to handle this. And I went into our room, and I laid on a bed, and I burst into tears.
I have to say, it was, on my end, a little refreshing to see you have such a breakdown, because it feels like I'm the one always dealing with those mega tantrums.
Well, you're welcome.
Now you know how I feel.
The more you know.
I think one of the funniest things you told me this week was that when you told a dad on a play date, another dad, about one of Bryn's epic tantrums, and he said, what did he say? I don't know what to tell you.
Well, he was so nice about it, but I was telling him this story and he got real quiet and still. And then I started to get nervous because he wasn't saying anything. So I kept rambling on about it to try to make it seem like it wasn't as big a deal. But the more I talked about it, the more it sounded like a big deal. And so he stayed quiet. And then I finally just had to stop talking. And then he said, I don't know what to tell you. And I was like,
I think it's so
I wasn't looking
funny.
For sympathy.
It's hard to get a handle on, but it's so funny that he didn't at any point try to, like, offer up any of his own experiences with his kid or indicate that his kid has tantrums.
Oh, he did. He did. Early on.
Okay.
But
made it sound like he was just like, huh, that's weird.
I mean, a little bit. He was very supportive. I think the problem was he cared too much, and I was just telling him something I thought was a funny story. And he had the audacity to sympathize.
Can we talk about your dad playdate?
Oh, sure.
So, as you and I know, you're very shy about meeting other dads and parents.
No, what are you talking about?
Despite your performer enthusiasm, you're very shy around real people in the real world.
Oh, I just don't want anyone to look at me.
And so you don't have really a lot of dad friends except for, like, your friend who you knew before he became a dad.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's true.
I went on the first play date to this house with you, and that, I think, was a nice buffer for you. And then you had a play date where you and this dad ended up jamming out on guitars together.
Yeah, we went full dad, I will say. This was a joyous afternoon. I went there. He's like, hey, I don't know how it started, but he's like, check out my old guitar. He's like, you play? And I was like, yeah. And he starts playing. And I'm so uncomfortable at first because as a comedian, I realized how entrenched in my earnestness should be mocked in the comedy world. And so, and that's sort of everything. Oh my God, what am I even talking about? So many things when you're a comedian are just asking to be made fun of. And I consider myself a very open and, like, positive person. But there's a certain level of earnestness that I'm just not used to being around. And one of those things is like, hey, you play guitar? Like, let's play guitar. You know, and, like, unless you're amazing at guitar and that, like, guy in the corner playing guitar, my impulse is to make fun of this.
Long story short, you and this dad jammed out while your sons danced next to you for what sounds like a long time.
And I will admit, it was incredibly fun and joyous and earnest, and I'm not that great at playing guitar, and it didn't matter because we got to make up funny songs.
You are good at playing guitar. I don't know why you think that.
This this is an ongoing conversation we have had, which is my wife, Beth Newell.
My wife.
Is so much more impressed with the fact that I can play guitar adequately than any of the comedy that I do.
It's the only thing you downplay.
Oh, so you're just attracted to my humility.
No, I just think it's a skill that I don't have, playing instruments. Or it's not something that comes to me easily. Like, I could work at it and then maybe be able to play a couple chords. But you could pick up a brand new instrument, and then in the course of an afternoon, you, like, know the basics of that instrument, which I think is far beyond my skill set.
I'm going to take this compliment that I'm getting right now and just end the segment abruptly.
This next segment is called Did You Knows? This is a segment where Peter learns a fact about parenting and shares it with us.
Okay, so this is a crazy birth story that I read. This is from the BBC, and I'm gonna paraphrase here. But so essentially, this woman went to a doctor. They're having trouble conceiving, and so they had in vitro fertilization. From the husband and wife, this doctor created 12 embryos that are essentially were all the same, like twins, but 12. And then they found the healthiest ones, and they implanted 3 of them. And as the pregnancy went on, she lost one of them and ended up having twins. This was in 1992. And then they froze the however many remaining embryos. And then this, like, corrupt fertilization doctor left the country, and these eggs, like, went missing. Blah, blah, blah. Years and years went later, they got them back. That's not even an important part of the story. And they thawed out some of these eggs, and they implanted a few of them, and she had, like, a horrible reaction to them and, like, went into shock and almost died. And so then they were like, well, this is not safe. Let's put this off. So years and years go by. It's 13 years later, and they decide they want to try it again. And they have, like, 4 embryos left. So they thaw them out, and one of them is, like, perfect. And so they go with that one, and she gets pregnant, and she gives birth 13 years later to technically the 3rd triplet. So this baby has 2 identical triplets. Well, I don't know if they're identical. 2 of the other triplets who were born 13 years before.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't know that's how fertilized embryos were. I thought they were fertilizing, like, multiple eggs or something. How did they...
You know what? As I'm saying this, I don't know. That's a great question.
But this is what the article said, is that this was an identical twin to the first 2 kids. You don't know. You're looking it up now. You're going on the internet. You don't know what you're saying.
Longest frozen embryo baby born. Healthy baby girl's been born in the U.S. after spending the last 13 years in frozen suspension as an embryo. This is thought to be the longest embryo, blah, 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 blah. Has 2 teenage siblings who were conceived through in vitro fertilization at the same time, and she was frozen, which technically makes her a triplet.
Technically makes her a triplet.
Okay, it's still very interesting.
Okay, but they don't share DNA like that.
I don't think so. But the amazing thing is an embryo being frozen for 13 years.
It's funny because we were talking about this at work, which is that, you know, there's all this, like, pressure on women my age to start freezing their eggs if they haven't hooked a man, and it's not necessarily, there's not enough info out there to know if freezing your eggs is going to be successful at this point, or, like, if the eggs are gonna last. There's just, like, so it's interesting to hear that experience.
What would you do if we had triplets?
I mean,
like, now we've had Brennan and Maven, we accidentally get pregnant again. And you find out you're having triplets.
It's hard to imagine not losing my mind.
People do this. All parents of twins, triplets, bless you.
This is going to be maybe controversial for some of our listeners, but I would genuinely consider abortion.
We're going there. We just lost half the listeners.
Depending on like the timing of us finding this out and how bad I wanted this pregnancy to begin with. Triplets is insane.
My mom is a twin.
Right.
And she has two older siblings besides her twin brother. So I think when they were born, my grandmother had four kids under five or six. Under five, I think.
Yeah, I know you can survive twins and triplets. I just don't want to be the one to prove it.
Hey, how would you like to prove something incredible?
You know what's funny is when I was pregnant with Maven, I had paranoid fear that I was pregnant with twins. And I think what happened was I cracked an egg and it was a double yolked egg. And I'd never had that in my whole life. And I was like, this is a sign. It's going to be twins. And I was like, we're screwed. And so I went to the midwife saying like that I was worried it was twins. And they were doing the sonogram. And she was like, it's really not looking like twins. I'm only seeing one baby. And like, but she said it to me in a way where she thought I was going to be disappointed. Like she was like, I think there's only one in there. And I was like, no, that's great. I was bringing it up because I'm scared to death. Like, not.
I very distinctly remember being younger and cracking open an egg and there was two yolks and being so upset by it because it was just the clearest, like, oh, by the way, you're eating chicken embryos. Like, this is a living thing. And that whole thought, something I'd ignored my whole life, and that was just too real. You ever cracked open a bloody egg?
I did, and that was when I was, like, 9 months pregnant with Bryn, and it was terrifying.
Oh, that's right.
I was like, this is a sign. Everything's going to go bad. I'm going to go into labor. It's the end. Like,
your egg future-telling track record is crap.
Well, the timing of those eggs was horrible. And I will say, in retrospect, I think that the first one was a sign that labor was imminent, and the second one with the double yolks was just a sign of pregnancy or, like, fertility.
You can make an argument about any egg.
I have never in my life had either of those situations happen when I was not pregnant.
It's proof. Now it's time for You Knows What He Said? This is where one of us gives the other one a series of Bryn quotes, only one of which is a real quote, and I don't have one this week because even though I've been around our kids more, I've not been ready because I was paying attention.
Okay,
Beth, which, give me the options.
Which of these things did Bryn say to me? The first one is, you fucked up.
It's possible.
The second one is, you're bugging me out. The third one is,
I gotta say, the first one seems more likely.
The third one is, you suck.
You fucked up. You're bugging me out. You suck. Pause. Our daughter is crying. We're recording at night. Be right back.
Okay,
no, we need to talk about what just happened. So we were interrupted by our... Normally we do this in the morning. We're recording at night. So I go in to the room. It's very hot today. And so I go in there. The light is on. That's why Maven was crying. Bryn, very recently, he stopped using his pacifier because it broke. And so he has taken her pacifier. He's in his bed with a fully loaded up nighttime pull-up diaper. He's got the pacifier. The air is off. He turned off the air conditioning. It's a million degrees. And Maven's crying. What is going on in here? So I go and I changes his diaper. I give it back the pacifier. And then I go and I get him a wet washcloth. and he puts it on his head, and this is revelatory for him. He loves this thing. But it's a bit sad in there. And I explained to him that the air actually is the thing that makes it not hot. And he understood. Anyway, you fucked up. You bugging out. You suck. Those are my options?
You fucked up. You're bugging me out. You suck.
Okay. Unfortunately, well, I'm going to eliminate. You bugging out is not something either one of us have ever said ever. I'm fairly sure. Nor really is you suck. That's not something we would say. You fucked up is definitely something we would say, and therefore that is my guess.
It was a trick question because he actually said two of these things, which is he said, you fucked up, and he said, you're bugging me out. And I think he heard you're bugging me out on the Story Pirates podcast in a song. But
I don't think so.
The funny story behind the first one is he was watching YouTube in my bedroom before bed, and I wanted
my
to turn
my favorite
it,
thing.
I wanted to turn it off. I turned off the TV, and quietly under his breath, he goes, "You fucked up." It was really, really threatening.
It's terrifying.
I don't know where he heard this. I am going to guess from his friend at school.
There's a kid at school that teaches him things.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say the name.
Anyway.
But I know who you are.
But I thought it was kind of funny. And then later the same night, he said...
Wait, how did you react? Did you acknowledge this?
What happened was I said, what did you say? And yeah. He put his hand on his mouth and he was like, nothing. I didn't say anything. So he knows it's bad, which further leads me to believe he heard it at school because I feel like there was an incident behind this.
He knows.
Yeah, he knows it's bad.
I heard him swear once and we've talked about it on this podcast already. Apparently it did not have that much of an effect because he said it again.
But I like that he was scared about it and wouldn't repeat it.
Yeah. There's a proper amount of shame.
Yeah.
You know what? Swear all you want, but be scared to swear in front of your parents.
But then later that night, he said, you're bugging me out. And I thought it was hysterical.
You're bugging me out?
Yeah, because no, whoever says that.
That's not on the Story Parts podcast.
I think it is.
No, I'm pretty confident the person that records it would know more than the person who doesn't listen to it.
I don't think you remember every like casual aside on the podcast.
You'd be surprised how obsessed I am with myself.
Well, I don't think it was you saying this.
Oh, then it's likely. I don't listen to other people's lines.
This next segment is called Would You Knows. This is where we posit a hypothetical parenting situation to one another and how we would handle it.
Beth, I got another good one from our friends on the internet. This one comes to us from Harry. Harry wants to know, I'm going to give this to you, Beth. Harry wants to know, would you knows what to do? Bonus points, Harry, for using the proper formatting of the question. Would you knows what to do if your infant was taller than you and could thus access areas of your home forbidden to you, above the refrigerator, top of the Christmas tree, etc. Wow. Why are those things forbidden to me? Harry, proofread, or I should learn to read.
This is kind of, didn't we have another one where your kid has like superpowers? This is similar.
Yeah, so this is less dangerous.
Now your kid is enormous.
Like you said, now your kid is enormous, like it's the same kid that had heat vision.
I'm sick of this kid. Okay, so the... tall kid. Okay, I am assuming this kid still has the same brain function of a child, and
yeah, they're just huge.
They're just enormous. So, what I would say is, I would continue the childproof locks we currently have on our cabinets, but I would extend them to all the cabinets.
What is the most dangerous thing that they could get to now that they can't get to now that they could when they're a giant infant?
I mean, well, right now, Bryn has kind of already learned to get on the counter, which means he's within reach of a lot of knives.
Oh, yeah. He went into the kitchen tonight and came back with a slice of pizza. And that was in a place I did not think he could get to.
Yeah, he's figuring it out. The cabinets up high actually are like not that bad. It's like the mixer and
this is not a problem, Harry. Is he taller? Is he stronger than us?
This question should be less about the cabinets and should be more about how this kid's not going to kill you.
Yeah, that's true. You know what? He can take the star off the top of the Christmas tree all he wants. Is he going to strangle me to death?
Yeah, suffocate you. I already have enough trouble with both of our kids elbowing me in the boob every single day.
I got kicked in the crotch so comically hard tonight. And I literally... Bryn was sitting on the counter, and so he didn't mean to, but he just kicked me exactly crotch level.
So,
and I instinctually went, "You kicked me in the nuts!" And he's never heard that term before, and I've never screamed that out loud before in my whole life, and I was embarrassed to repeat it just now.
He's definitely pocketed that one. He's like, nuts.
Could feel that it was funny, but also a serious thing that had happened.
You know, the problem with him is that he's... really, really good.
Should this be a segment? Beth now does. the problem with him.
He's just really smart about language, and he remembers people's names very well upon hearing them once. And, like, if he hears a new phrase that has a certain ring to it that he doesn't recognize, you can see him doing the math in his head, like, I'm going to remember this one.
Well, he's exactly that age where if he chooses to be interested in something... he absorbs all of it. My dad bought them this book. It's called Hello, Hello. It's full of animals, obscure animals from the world. He knows every single name because we read it every night. That's the rainbow agama, and that's the sunda pangolin, and that's the rhinoceros hornbill. And because he's just chosen to be interested in it. And I think phrasing...
yeah.
He's very interested in just... how people say things and how people gesticulate.
Well, what's funny about that is that book, he has memorized the way that you have read it to him. And neither of us really knows how to pronounce those animals. But I tried to read it to him tonight and he kept correcting me on the pronunciation.
Oh, I'm sure you did it all wrong.
I was like, you don't even know.
Yes, we do. We've read this book every night. We then look it up on Google on my phone, and we look at real pictures of them. We've
Googled. Did you play YouTube videos that on the pronunciation of their names?
I don't care what the truth is. We have our own reality that we've built, and we are... Bryn...
I'm fine with that. I just think if I'm going to be corrected, I should get to opt out of reading those books. You can handle bedtime.
I didn't tell you to. First of all, I almost always do. And you don't have to read that book. It's really good, though. A sunda pangolin? It's an armored beast.
Wow.
Rainbow agama. Long-beaked echidna. Now it's time for Listeners Want to Knows. This is where we dive into some listener mail and talk about it, answer some questions, or react. Now, we got a lot of feedback from our Past Lives episode. A lot of people had opinions, and in all directions. And there were two emails that jumped out as just the epitome of you and me. And I wanted to briefly... You could see right away which one of these listeners I'll claim as one of my own and which one is more a Beth. This first one, and I can't read this whole thing because it is so long and I love every piece of it. But this is from Katie, and I'm going to skip around a little bit. But Katie writes, on Peter's call for backup, which I did, I said, back me up. First, on the idea that it's possible that Bryn has a past life because anything is possible. Logically, for every unknown but possible scenario, there is an equal and opposite unknown but possible. These two statements are equally valid. It is possible that Bryn had a past life. It is possible that Bryn did not have a past life, which means that possible has no bearing on what is real. Just because something is not impossible does not mean that it is probable. Therefore, Peter's concession that it is possible Bryn had a past life is just as important a point to the argument as the idea that we are all in the Matrix or Elvis is still alive. Moving on. Why are Beth's thoughts on past lives so unreasonable and her conclusion that people have past lives demonstrably false? I could go on and on.
I just think it's weird. This person says that it is possible, but then says that it's demonstrably false. It's like not...
Well, I'll go on. The way a logical argument works, which is something you hearing, is a person presents a number of premises which, if all true, result in a conclusion that must also be true. But if any premise in the argument is invalid, the conclusion is also invalid. A logical fallacy is the use of invalid or otherwise faulty reasoning in the construction of an argument. Beth's argument commits many fallacies, the most important of which I have highlighted here below. And there are several sections that...
Oh my God, this person sounds very fun to be around.
Anecdotal fallacy, when a proponent uses a personal experience as evidence instead of reliable and falsifiable data. Now, listen, I'm not reading this whole thing because we literally don't have enough time. But and I'm also cutting out the part that makes it clear that it's very tongue-in-cheek and just a logical argument that this person enjoys writing out. And boy, I had a nice exchange back and forth because that is also very much how I think.
I just don't understand why these science Nazis like act as though science hasn't discovered things over time. Like, we haven't always known things as we now know them.
Sure.
So to say that, like, certain things are impossible because we don't currently have evidence for them is so bizarre to me.
Well, I think it's not saying that, it's saying that this thing must be true because of anecdotal evidence.
I didn't say it must be true. I feel like this whole argument is being twisted on me. I was just saying I don't like to be attacked for believing it's possible. I'm not the one who is 100% sure of my opinion.
Well, I will say the back and forth that I had with Katie, who is lovely, went on to talk about how to not be jerks about it. But anyway, the point is not to tell you you're wrong. I just want to give you a taste of some of the feedback we got. Now I want to read.
I just don't like.
I want to read a different email.
I'm being accused of logical fallacy. I think is.
Well, I mean. Anyway, here's the different email we got from Valentina. I'll read the entire email. This one, dear Peter and Beth. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Beth seems like an old soul, and Peter seems like a new one. How do you reconcile this as partners and as parents?
Well, Valentina, as an old soul, it requires a lot of patience interacting with these new souls.
boy, it's hard. It's some of the emails we get. It's always hard to read tone online, and I'm pretty sure that these are all very positive. But it's
yeah.
Well, this one reads very positive and earnest to me, but I'm curious as to how earnest it is and whether this person knows how well. I don't want to be disrespectful.
You're about to say something condescending.
Yeah, I don't want to be. Well, of course, it's so belittling to be called a new soul because one. It's ridiculous because there is no such thing as a soul,
because you
according
can't.
To me, and I know you don't agree, and a lot of people don't agree, but it's just like, oh, you don't believe in this, so you must be a naive,
experienceless
soul.
Here's an example, though, of why I actually fully buy this, and I think we've talked about this maybe on the podcast before, is that you're an experiential learner.
Okay.
And I'm
sure,
more
yeah.
of a planner, and mm-hmm. If I was to make a recipe, install a hook on the wall, something, I would maybe have done some research or have read up on it. You just dive headfirst into things, just busting down walls, making a mess.
And I like to fix my mistakes.
You like to live and learn. And I would prefer to create less chaos in my wake. And I think that is an old soul, new soul thing. Oh,
so the logical argument is that you've led more lives than I have, and that's why you know?
Mm-hmm. I do believe that we've all led multiple lives, and I think that we have certain skills that it does not logically make sense to me that we've picked them up in one lifetime. For example, I think, you know, growing up, I was really good at drawing. You were really good at music. I think that when something comes naturally to you like that, I think that you've picked it up in a past life.
Well, I respect that point of view, and I do not agree in it in any way whatsoever.
Well, you'll see on the other side.
Okay. Oh, boy. Let's not... this is just us dancing around death, I made my peace with death by never talking about it, and then here we are right now.
This, my point of view allows me to not fear death, and well, I like that.
This is what I actually think the point of all this is, and where I have learned to respect our differences, is that everybody's dealing with the fact that, oh, we're going to die, and we don't know what's going to happen. That's terrifying, and it's paralyzing to feel so helpless. And everybody needs to find a way to deal with this thing. And my way is making a decision that, oh, you know what? There's not, you die, you're done. That's it. There's nothing I can do about it. Now let's change the topic. And that actually does make me happy and comfortable that I don't need to deal with that anymore. Dealing with the way that you deal with it makes you really happy and comfortable, and it makes you feel, and I know.
I just don't, like, if I was just living for this one life, like, I just feel like I would live so selfishly and, like, I mean, there's a virtue to being in the moment, but I think I like having a long view of things. I like feeling like I was put here for a reason and that it's, like, a drop in the bucket of history that, like, is hopefully serving some higher purpose going forward, and not just like me as a person trying to like get as much joy out of this life before I die.
Like, it's so funny because I'm like, I ultimately I think it's all totally meaningless, but that doesn't equal like, well, I can do whatever I want. Because if I did that, my life would be miserable because people would hate me. And so being a good person is the best way for me to live a happy life while I'm here. And you know what? Ultimately, we don't know. So let's be cool.
Anyway, this is a podcast about parenting.
Yeah. But I just want to say thank you to everyone who reached out. Other people wrote in.
There's a lot of controversy over
yeah,
this.
Yeah. Some emails not so nice. Some emails said Beth is dumb and I'm sexist. And that's a perfectly valid point of view, too.
Is it?
Anyway.
The same person said both of those things?
Yeah. Well, somebody wrote in and... this is one where I can't tell how serious they were being, but the subject line was, you're both dumb, or something like that. And because I said, dads, back me up, she said, that's a sexist point of view, that only dads can be logical and only moms can be flighty. I'll accept that criticism, but I was trying to make fun of myself for being a stereotypical type of dad who needs to explain everything. But fair enough. And she thinks you're stupid.
Just for no...
There are reasons, but...
People will say anything when they're safely behind their computers. If you're listening and you're a nice person, please rate and review our podcast.
Yeah, it's true. Oh yeah. Well, let's not get into that. But yeah, somebody reviewed our podcast after only hearing the ad and did not like that you belittled me in the ad. And so she doesn't. This was great. I need to share this, and we shouldn't get into trolling or whatever. But this person gave us one star because the woman belittles the man in the trailer. And you also have another series that portrays men as dumb, fumbling, and incompetence.
Another series?
I think they're talking about Reductress. Okay. But Lista said. Portrays men as dumb, fumbling, and incompetence. If you're going to call somebody incompetent, use the right word.
I mean, I'm already getting like 10% of the normal hate by virtue of you being on this podcast and it not being singularly female, so...
Oh, yeah, I'm getting a little taste of your feminist hate mail. And I feel good about it. boy, we shouldn't focus on it because so many of you have said such wonderfully positive things, and we love all
of you. Yeah, most of you are great. This is just a fun fraction of the comment.
I even think that person who called you dumb was being a little funny, because she did say, like, aside from that, I've really been enjoying the show.
I shouldn't have said she's not fun. She's probably very fun.
Yeah, you're all great. You listen at all. You can say whatever you want to us. We're putting ourselves out there. We're asking for it, really. Oh, boy. We love you all. And this has been Listeners Wanna Knows. All right, this has been another episode of We Knows Parenting. If you want to send us any questions or if you have any would you knows scenarios, you can send those to us at weknowspod@gmail.com or find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, weknowspod. Beth, anything you want to plug?
You can find me on Twitter at Beth New.
You can find me on Twitter, Nick Nen, MICNEN. Check out the Story Pirates podcast. Check out the Reductress Minute. And we'll see you next time. Yeah? Bye.